2 years ago, Americans watched in horror as a crisis unfolded at the Kabul airport.
She was tear-gassed and beaten.
Images of thousands desperate to escape Taliban oppression filled our news feeds. More than 80,000 Afghans made it to America. But the story didn't end there.
It was very cold. There was no power, no heat.
Who would help our newest neighbors? I'm Andrea Smartin. In Stranger Becomes Neighbor, you'll hear the stories of some remarkable refugees who left their homes and their dreams behind, only to start over from zero.
Their only possession was three blankets.
And you'll meet Americans who stepped up to help them.
You want me to come when you deliver your baby.
What can one person do in the face of an international disaster decades in the making? That's Stranger Becomes Neighbor. Find us at kslpodcast.com, follow us on Apple Podcasts, or anywhere else you listen.
All right, welcome on into the show. Scott Mitchell, Jason Buck here. Rather recently, of course, the traditional National Letter of Intent Day, which is the first Wednesday of February, has come and gone. And, of course, our local teams here, the Utes and the Cougars, that's all we really care about. Sorry, Utah State.
Come on, man. We care about Utah State.
No, we don't. Let's face it. We don't care. Sorry.
Yes, we do.
No, you got to do something amazing and spectacular in order to get our attention and love. Love, get it, as in Jordan Love, who's projected, which is crazy, to be a first-round draft choice from Utah State.
Oh, bull.
Yeah.
He is not projected first round.
A lot of mock drafts have him going in the first round. He's like,
that blows me away.
Yeah, it's Burrows to Herbert and Love, and they expect them all. They expect the three to go early, and he'll go somewhere mid to late first round is what they're projecting. That doesn't mean anything.
That blows me away. I'm shocked, but you know what? Good on him. I mean, yeah.
You're not
I'm excited about anybody.
You're not
success,
the only one.
But
you're not the only one shocked, Jason. And anyway, so National Letter of Intent Day. The second phase, because they have an early signing period in December, which most people really like. A lot of what usually happens there. And for Utah, it was certainly a significant class. But I think that the one intriguing thing about all of this is Devontae Henry Cole, who's been a spot running back for Utah, played somewhat last season for Utah, has jumped in the transfer portal and landed at BYU. And, of course, these schools are now holding back scholarships for this very thing. They hold back two or three scholarships to see what might jump out of the transfer portal, to see where they might have not gotten the recruits that they needed to bolster certain positions. And so this was kind of a big move. And my question to you first, and then we'll get into all the other details here. Do you think that's a good move for BYU to have that happen?
Oh, absolutely. I think it's a good move for BYU and Devontae. I think BYU's an excellent school for these transfer portal running backs. BYU's going to be a good, offensive line orientated school, and give them attention and go in and be the guy right away, right, and be the stud and get utilized. And I just think it's a great place for both of them. Devontae knows the state of Utah now. He joined the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, so he's perfect for, fit just to be familiar with this state. Now he's been here for 4 years, and that's a great move for both parties in that one.
You know why it happened, don't you?
Yeah, Roderick. Roderick knew him, from when he was recruited.
No.
What secret do you know?
Oh, my goodness, Jason. I can't believe
it. Besides Roderick.
What does every good man do?
Married a good little Mormon girl from Utah.
Thank you. He follows some woman, right? That's what they do. Well, apparently his rather significant girlfriend is on the soccer team at BYU.
So there
were a lot of reasons. Aaron Roderick, sure, he's definitely one of those reasons. An opportunity to play.
Right, had a good relationship. Yeah.
I think he saw what happened with Tyson Williams and how that really worked out, and that it's a possibility. And had he not gotten injured last year, would have had a remarkable season. And so I think,
yeah.
And the whole the whole church thing certainly plays into it, but the girl is like
all of it.
Yeah, that's top banana. Come
on. Tyson Williams, I think we both agree would have been a 1,000-yard rusher last year. And so the way they're using him,
all right,
and so, that's why I think it's just a perfect place for guys like them to, you know, BYU to transfer to.
I think one of the things that's interesting to me, okay, is you have this, like, my question is, well, can anyone help you right now, right? And because you look at BYU, and yes, I think they'll be better on the offensive line. They're really solid at quarterback. They're really solid at tight end. They're really solid, it looks like now, at running back. But what about wide receiver? It just seems to be kind of the area that's a challenge for them. Did they get anything in the signing period of any immediate help at that wide receiver position?
I look like that kid from Vegas, when I was reading up on it, has the most potential to give him immediate help at receiver. And, you know, receiver is a position where young guys can help right away, you know, much more so, obviously, than, you know, the front seven. But you're right, they need help there, and they've been kind of weak at that position for a little while now. So hopefully that kid from Vegas, you know, can give him some spark there at receiver.
Yeah, so Miles Davis is his name. He's one of the guys that committed to him. There was another player they got out of Modern Day, Epps, who they think actually was recruited by quite a few schools, and they felt like his size-wise, like he had an opportunity to go to a Pac-12 school, a Power 5 school, and he didn't. And a lot of it was because he felt that he could play immediately. And he might be a guy that, you know, whether he is or he isn't, I don't really know. But I do know that he's a guy that you could certainly look to as potentially a guy that can help right now. Because isn't that what you kind of want from, I don't know, I do. It's like, I hate this signing day period, personally.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, you want, yes. I mean, especially when you're weak at the position like they are. I mean, they need help there right now. You got to, and it's a position that kids can come in as a freshman and contribute, you know, without getting their head ripped off, you know, like an offensive lineman. That would be rare for a true freshman to come in and play. BYU needs that. And so, you know what, it makes perfect sense for him. Like you said, having some Power 5 offers and really good looks, BYU, that's their one advantage, besides, you know, the church call and being LDS, you know, if he is obviously a big one. But the ability to be able to come in and play right now,
right,
versus going to a, you know, USC or UCLA in a skill position, man, that would be really enticing. So hopefully he can get in and really get in there and help BYU, because they do need that.
Well, we had an interesting conversation the other night with Mitch Harper, who's on KSLSports.com, and he's the BYU insider. And he mentioned, and I'll probably be shot for saying this, but he said players that come in and kind of stay and play tend to have better success at BYU than the ones that go on missions and come back later. Yeah. I said it.
Yeah. You know, Scott, I've always told people, you know, people that, whether I was playing in the NFL or newspapers, you know, you know, the locker room in the NFL, they'd get on you and say, well, you guys have all these old guys that they're just, you know, they're 2 years older, and that's why you're good, and that's cheating, and da-da-da. And I'm like, hey, guys, you don't realize, I'd say more players that go on missions come back worthless than the players that come back and are awesome from going on a mission. I mean, I saw that all the time at BYU. It was not it wasn't a guaranteed win for guys to go on missions and come back like they're freaking yoked studs ready to play football. I mean, some of them did, but a lot of them washed out. And so I didn't look at the, you know, mission program as a big advantage. to BYU. If anything, it was, at best, it was a wash.
Yeah, that's an interesting perspective. Yeah, you know, you've seen guys come back and play better and not, and so.
Yeah, you see guys that come back with zero desire to play football anymore.
The bottom line is it's a really good thing for someone to go do in their life, and
it is.
It really is, and would not fault it. Would want recommend that to anyone, but you know, football it's kind of challenging to be able to do both of those things.
No, it is. It is awesome. Right?
I didn't go on a mission, Jason. You didn't go on a mission, and we're still active members of our church, and we're good people.
And Steve Young didn't go, and Robbie Bosco didn't go.
Steve Young had anxiety, so he couldn't go. And I have little tiny horns that grow out of my head. They're not big ones, little tiny ones. But other than that, I'm okay.
But me too. I get the little horns that, you know, when I grew up in Michigan, come up and feel our heads because we were Mormon and they thought we had horns in our head.
You look more sinister than me, by the way. Your look,
with my beard.
Yeah, you're kind of a worldly man, Jason.
It's the defensive lineman thing.
You know what you are? You're a worldly man with a with a pure heart. That's what you are.
Yeah. I'm a good Latter-day Saint that'll bite you at the drop of a hat.
You're crusty on the crusty on the outside and warm and gooey on the inside. That's what you are.
Yeah, that's a good way of putting it.
Yeah. So I think probably the big thing for BYU is that they're always pushing getting depth, and it feels like they've really been able to do that the last couple of years in recruiting. And they're
improving. I think he's, you know, getting better each year. He's growing as a coach. It seems like I see some sparks in the recruiting that I like. You know, I think he's changed his recruiting from the first 2 years that I recruited. You know, a couple of recruiting classes I saw, I see it changing a little bit. So it's telling me that he's getting smarter. You know, they've got to move. They finished 81st. You know, they got to get up there around 50. I think because BYU is never going to, you know, be up there in the top 20 or 30, but they can be up there around 50, and then, you know, because they're projecting players. They just got to be better at projecting players. And when they start kicking out the NFL numbers again, like, you know, five players a year and the type of numbers we got back in the 80s, then I'll know they're getting the right players. They're developing them into NFL players. Thus, you know, they're competing. They might be recruiting at the 50th number, but they're finishing, you know, around the top 25, right?
Yep.
And then they're where they should be.
All right, well, switching gears here, we're going to go over to the Utah side of it. And speaking of where their class ranks, Utah was 29 in the country and 5th in the Pac-12, which is and actually the overall rating of the class is the highest that it's ever been since Utah has joined the Pac-12. So the success of the last couple of years, kind of moving where you're competing for championships, has certainly enticed a lot of people to the program. More four-star recruits than Utah's ever had. They've had a transfer portal in Jake Bentley from South Carolina, and that will be an interesting battle to see who the quarterback is. But the thing that I kind of like about this, you have Xavier Carlton, who's a four-star defensive lineman out of Juan Diego. You've got Van Fillinger, who flipped from Texas, another four-star kid out of Corner Canyon. You have Clark Phillips III, who flipped from Ohio State to Utah, another four-star guy. And you have Nate Ritchie, of course, who actually his final grade, I guess, in high school came out as a four-star player, and he went to Lone Peak. But what you end up getting, or what I'm liking, and it's been a pet peeve of mine, is you've got these really good players need to stay in the state of Utah and play here locally, but they have to have a reason to stay too. And you get a sense that Utah is one of those Power Five schools in a Power Five conference that's now giving them something to really consider and look at. And you've seen that. You've seen a lot of these players that could go other places and even had offers, and even, you know, some of them flipped their commitments. And I've asked a lot of people. I've said, look, does this mean anything that these players are they're flipping their commitments. And they're like, this is unprecedented, right? You've never heard this from happening at Utah or anything. So, yeah, it's a significant deal that this happens.
Well, man, buddy, just to tell you, you know, you're Mr. Utah, but I've got one on you with Utah that you don't know. And that is, I was speaking up in Idaho and giving a speech in eastern Idaho. So I got to know the Tongai that you just signed,
yes.
The 6'6", 320.
Yes.
And
offers from Washington and Nebraska.
He was getting offered from Nebraska. When I talked to him up there, because his father was a professor of mine at Ricks College, and the mother so knew me from back at Ricks. I gave the speech, talked to her and the kid, gave him advice. At that time, they told me Utah was kind of out of the picture, and they weren't really talking to him that much, and he was looking at Washington or Nebraska. And it was just killing me that BYU wasn't in on the hunt on this one. They'd offered him, but because he said they just kind of disappeared and didn't talk to him again, I think he gave up the pursuit. And BYU, if I was down to coach him for Kalani, number one, I would have had Tongai at BYU. So too bad for that. But I'm really glad to see that Utah came back in the picture and must have really got after him at the end. And you know, I advise him if you want to stay close to home, get where there's an NFL coach that can get you the NFL and the best program, and it means a lot to stay close to home. So I think that
look at you, Jason
really,
Buck. He's recruiting.
It really helped him.
You're recruiting for the dark side. Look at you.
Well, no, I didn't say a school. I mean BYU, Utah. But you want to go where you're going to get a chance to go to the NFL? Talking to the mom, I think they'd really like to go to BYU if the program was right. But it looks like they changed their mind the last second and went to Utah. Yeah,
that was a late get and a surprise, and one that really it continued to bolster this class for Utah. Well,
because he looked like he was going to Nebraska when I talked to him.
Yeah.
Utah really wasn't in the picture, and it was making me sick that a kid like that from Eastern Idaho wasn't going to Utah or BYU or even Utah State. You know, and staying close to home. Yeah. But. I'm glad he stayed close to home.
Well, I think
classy family, and BYU's got to start getting guys like that.
I think the thing about this signing day. So, if you look at a school like BYU, it's that have they created some depth, and it appears that they've done that with the linebacker position and some of the other positions that, and they've also, you know, there might be a player or two that immediately might come in and help, and they've created some speed, and there's just a lot of. You know, it feels like recruiting, and it's a long process. So it'll be interesting to see what kind of impact that has down the road. But from the
it looked like BYU's getting a little better length out at defensive end. They had a couple of 6'4" guys in there at DN, and gotten some depth to the D line. And I agree, it looks like it's getting better
from the Utah side of it. It's not rebuilding, it's more reloading. And you look at these players, and that's a good thing because that's not necessarily what's happened in the past. So you're a program, because if you slip and fall off the radar, you know, you're kind of a one-hit wonder type of program. You look at Washington State, where a couple of years ago, they're, you know, Gardner Minshew, and they're going to a popular bowl game, and they have one remarkable season. And it's not something they can sustain. And in order to really build a competitive program, you've got to have consistent years of recruiting and production. And so will Utah win the South again this year? It's going to be more competitive than it certainly has been the last couple of years. But they've got players with ability in positions. You know, they've got some solid people coming in at quarterback, and they've got a good staple of running backs, and their offensive line, you know, which is hopefully will be more mature, because only one guy is lost there. They have two returning defensive linemen. The one place in the secondary, they're basically depleted, and so that's the area that they've got talented players. And so I think for both of these programs, the goals and objectives of recruiting feel like to me they've been achieved, and they're going to be these teams that are going to be better because of it moving forward.
Yes, and you know Kyle's proven, Kyle Whittingham is proven as you know, his recruiting class is moving up, but he's proven that he develops players.
Right.
And so even though he's recruiting at the, say, the number 29 that they hit, his output, you know, by the time he's developed them and had them there for 4 or 5 years in the system is much higher than that.
Right.
And so that's just good news for
you would think getting better players and that they're developed better, they're gonna yes. compete at a higher level.
Yes, they're gonna be top. You know, Kyle will have them at the top 10 level of play.
Right. All right, we're gonna take a break. We come back. I guess some guy here in Utah named Andy Reid won a Super Bowl, and I'm not sure there's a person in America that's sad about it. We'll find out what Jason thinks when we get back.
I'm Dave Cawley, investigative journalist and host of the podcast, Cold. Don't miss Cold's new Season 3, where I look into the unsolved disappearance of Cherie Warren, a woman last seen leaving her job at a Salt Lake City office in 1985. Police cast suspicion on Cherie's estranged husband and boyfriend, but never made any arrests or recovered Cherie's remains. Find Cold Season 3, The Search for Cherie, anywhere you get your podcasts.
Welcome back to Rivals. Scott Mitchell, Jason Buck here. Apparently, Andy Reid finally did it. And I can tell you that was the first thought that I had, because with 6 minutes and 10 seconds to go and the 49ers down by 10 points and Patrick Mahomes is just throwing another interception, you're like, the San Francisco 49ers are going to win the Super Bowl. It's going to be another year for Andy Reid. Maybe Patrick Mahomes isn't quite the player we thought he was, because he's not, you know, to that point, his passer rating was 49.5, which was not very good. He'd thrown two interceptions. He hadn't thrown an interception in 164 passes. So it didn't look good for the Kansas City Chiefs. And lo and behold, they did what they've been doing all this offseason, and that's coming back from double-digit deficits. And so just initially, you know, what are your thoughts about Andy Reid finally getting his first Super Bowl victory?
Oh, man, I'm so, so excited for Andy Reid. I mean, he is nothing but a first-class person. And, you know, he's so much like Lavelle, honestly. You know, I was calling him about a year ago. It was about a year ago, just looking at, you know, trying to get into, you know, coaching in the NFL, and you got to start out as a quality control, you know, assistant. And, man, he picks up the phone on a Saturday afternoon. I was going to leave a message and talks to me for like an hour. I mean, he's just a, you know, down-to-earth, you know, great guy. You can tell that by the way the team just loves him. So, you know, see him coach this long and being a Lavelle guy, a product of Lavelle's coaching, it was awesome to see him win it. I mean, nobody deserves it more.
There's a couple of things I think are really interesting about Andy Reid, and this is the first one. He's a guy that completely owns who he is.
Yeah.
He's an overweight guy. He wears facial hair, and he doesn't pretend to be anything else, anybody else. He's extremely comfortable in his own skin and who he is. And there's an authenticity to that. It's a believability. And when you have a coach that you may not like to hear what he has to say, or you love to hear what he says because you know you can trust it. And I think that's such an important component of a coach, a great coach. And you've been around the really good coaches and you've been around the really bad coaches and they all have different personalities, but they all own whatever personality they are. They don't try to pretend to be this person, you know, that's really something that he's not. And so I really, you know, cause I was thinking about why do so many people like Andy Reid? And it was like, cause he just, you know what? He's just fat. And it's like, okay. And he owns it. And like, he's not trying to be this image. You see so many of these young coaches that are just like, they're all super fit and they're all this and they wear the part, they own the part and that's them and that's fine. And that's great. And it just tells me that he's really confident in his knowledge of football, and he's confident in how he relates to people, because he's funny. Andy Reid's a funny guy,
and he's really
has
funny.
This personality that is like,
yeah,
I know the personality, and you love coaches like that, where you go out to practice and you're just like, oh man, you know what? I this is drudgery. This is a long deal, and he just has a way of lightening up the mode and the mood and all of that. But he also has the ability to be really serious and really down to earth. And then here,
right, he's real.
He's real. Right? He's real, real as rain. He really is. And I think that's what people appreciate, that authenticity. Here's the other part of it, though, why I think he's such a good coach. And he was known to be from a tree, right? So he's ultimately the responsibility of Bill Walsh. You know, Bill Walsh hires Mike Holmgren. Mike Holmgren ultimately hires Andy Reid. And Andy Reid learns from Mike Holmgren, blah, 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 right? And then he goes off and he becomes the head coach. But what Andy Reid has done that I think not everyone does, and then there's the two Bills. There's the Bill Parcells tree and there's the Bill Walsh tree. And a lot of most of football today is influenced by those two coaching genealogies. And origins, right? But what I've noticed with Andy Reid is Andy Reid said, you know what? I love you, Bill Walsh and Mike Holmgren. I'm starting my own tree. I'm going to build my own orchard, and I'm going to get me some fruit trees here, and I'm going to send them out in the world. I mean, because Doug Peterson was not only a former player of when he was in Green Bay, but also when he was the head coach in the Philadelphia. And then Doug Peterson comes in and goes and coaches with Andy Reid, and then he becomes the head coach and wins a Super Bowl. And you have Matt Nagy, and you have other guys who are having success in the NFL who came directly from Andy Reid. Now, of course, you can't help but be influenced by some of the people you coach with. And you know Mike Holmgren had a significant impact on Andy Reid and his style, and having you know having the relationship with LaVell Edwards and
from both of them, right? I mean, right. That's how Andy Reid got the job with Holmgren, is they're both LaVell guys.
Exactly, and so here you have this this guy that is really authentic and true to himself, but he's also a guy that has his own chutzpah. You know, he has his own. You know, he's growing trees. You know, he's not just falling off of it. And you look at even some guys like Bill Belichick, who the trees he's grown have not produced fruit. You know, even as great as Bill Belichick has been, his success has not necessarily trickled down to guys going on and being head coaches. And it just speaks, and I'm not disparaging Bill Belichick, because he'll go down as the greatest football coach in NFL history. But there's something to be said for a guy like Andy Reid, who's had this significant impact on a lot of these coaches and their ability to have success at what they do. And I have to believe, Jason, that that's extremely satisfying. You know, we want to inspire people. We want to, if we know that we're not only making them feel better, but they're having an impact in the world. Like, think of Doug Peterson and what kind of influence he's had and what kind of impact being a head coach has helped him and his family and the repercussions of that for generations. And when you and there are just certain people in this world that have that kind of impact. And you just kind of see a guy like Andy Reid having that and being able to have that impact on people. And that, to me, it's just a couple of things that really speak out to me about his, you know, why he's so liked and what's significant about him.
He's one of those coaches that everybody loves to play for and love to work for. And they remember him the rest of their lives to their dying day, whether it's the players or his assistant coaches. You know, he's that Joe Gibbs, that LaVell Edwards, you know, Bill Walsh, those men, you can see it. You know, they're loved by everyone that they touch in their life, and because they're real people, they're sincere, they're not competitive, obviously, but they're not self-centered and ego-driven, right? It's not about them. It's about everybody else. It's just those special guys that are competitive, world-class leaders that all those that come in contact with them just love them. They're those great mentors. And, you know, he has become one of those men and will be remembered like that.
Well, it's awesome what's happened. Couldn't be happier for the guy.
And, yeah.
And especially when we make expectations or predictions or
and we're right.
And we're just
right about Kansas City. Remember, right I picked them from the start of the playoffs.
Yep. Well, yeah.
But you know what?
You know, Jason, I picked them from the beginning of the year. Actually, it was the Kansas City Chiefs and the Chicago Bears, and I picked the Kansas City Chiefs to win the Super Bowl, and I think it's just the beginning of Patrick Mahomes.
Yeah, it's beginning. I was always pro Andy Reid, been wanting him to do it, and you know, that's why I talked to him about you know, possibly coaching with them, because you know, you tell he's the guy on his team going on the march, and Mahomes is special. I mean, he is so special. I was just so happy. It was just a fantastic Super Bowl all the way around. Well coached on both sides of the ball, and really went down to the last 2.5 minutes of the game. So,
and it was a great game. I believe.
Yeah.
I'm going to pat my own back here, Jason. I believe that a year ago, I was having this. I was doing this thing on another podcast I do, which I won't name. But
yeah.
I was talking about these generational players and these generational moments. And I brought up Patrick Mahomes a year ago.
Yeah.
And I said, this guy is the next generation of professional football. He's the guy. He's going to be the face of professional football for the next generation.
Yeah, he's special.
And most of the most of the players have an introduction with some play, some moment, right, where they just go, what the heck was that? Whether it was the catch from Joe Montana or the drive, or you know, it was the immaculate reception, or whatever it might be.
Right.
And so a year ago this happened, and I remember in the championship game, which most of these plays happen in championship games or playoff games. And Patrick Mahomes is very innocuously running out of bounds to, you know, stop the clock late in the first half so the team can, you know, they're probably just going to kick a field goal. And in instinct and intuition and understanding the whole circumstance, the fact that they had timeouts left, he kind of does a slight hesitation, which is total improv. It's total in the moment. And then he skirts around the end and cuts back to the inside and spins off a couple of guys and carries three Tennessee Titans into the end zone. And I believe that's the play of this generation. It was one of the most incredible plays that I had seen all season long. And you know, the Kansas City Chiefs are wearing this 49-year drought, 50 Super Bowls ago, you know, and they're like, and this is a close game, and they've lost. They haven't won a playoff game, you know, and a championship game in Arrowhead Stadium for years. And so they're carrying all of that angst with them. And in that moment, it all went away. The Chiefs won the game, got to the Super Bowl, ushered in a new generation of professional football in that one moment. I really believe this.
Yeah. I think this was just a fantastic year for the NFL. And honestly, in the whole, you know, American patriotism, the game, you know, that whole part of it where the NFL just came back, they ran the right advertisements before the game, the Johnny Cash, you know, flag, you know, United States flag story, and that little boy running through the streets, and the, you know, ushering all the youth onto the field. And, you know, I just think this was a great year for the NFL overall. And, you know, Mahomes, like you said, ushering in the new era, you know, and Andy Reid and the class, and just the right thing of the NFL from what had gone through from the last couple of years and the black eye they had. I think this was a fantastic year, because NFL done right honestly represents America. It does, you know, red, white, and blue, and who we are and the rugged individuals we are. You know, that I'm just such a patriot, and watching them sing the national anthem and the jets flying over, and it's just Americana, and I'm, you know, they're feeling the tingles up and down my spine. And I was so happy for the NFL this year to do it right.
All right, we're going to leave it at that because I don't want to talk about the halftime show. So we'll just leave it
at that. No, that was not family orientated.
zip. Nope.
Okay.
All right. Well, there you go. Happy for Andy Reid and kind of a very exciting thing. All right. Well, this round of Rivals is over. He's Jason Buck. I'm Scott Mitchell. We're powered by KSLSports.com. Find us on Facebook at the Rivals Podcast, Twitter at the Rivals Show. And until then, all right, this one time a year, I'm going to give it to you, Jason. You can one on leap year on the 29th of February. You can, if you're out there in this world, you can act like Jason.
And don't be like Scott Mitchell
on that one.
Quarterback.
That one.